Welcome back to the program. Maybe it was Gordon Gekko declaring that greed was good. Well, before that, Silent Cal Coolidge saying that the business of America is business. Or maybe it was simply the financial crash of 2008-2009. Whatever the reason, business today has an approval rating of about 19%, about as bad as Congress. But why? Business has been the great engine of progress in the American experience. From the man in the gray flannel suit to the jeans and turtlenecks of Steve Jobs. As David Brooks pointed out in his column this morning, when Europeans invested in national welfare states, American localities invested in human capital. America's greatest innovations and commercial blessings were unforeseen. They emerged bottom-up from tinkerers and business outsiders. So why has business gotten such a bad rap? Sure, we idolize small business, but what about big business that lifts people up and changes the dynamics of a nation? We're going to talk about that today with my guest, John Mackey. He is the co-founder and co-CEO of Whole Foods Market and the author of a new book entitled Conscious Capitalism, Liberating the Heroic Spirit of Business. John Mackey, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on today, Jeff.
Great to have you here. This notion of business somehow being a negative, that the business narrative gets caught up in greed and selfishness and so many other negative aspects of the business story, this is not a new phenomenon. This is a problem that business has been fighting for some time.
It's a problem that business has fought throughout the ages. Business has basically always been hated by the intellectuals. And it's been persecuted. Minority business people, such as the Jews in the West and the Chinese in the East, have routinely been run out of countries. Business is maybe the engine of progress, but it is not loved by most people. And the narrative about business has been captured by the critics and the enemies of business, from my perspective. And I think, you know, the reason we wrote our book, in a sense, was to try to take that narrative back, to help business people to reconceptualize what their business is about and to, in a much more positive, uplifting perspective and change the way they think about business. And business first needs to change the way it thinks about itself, and then it'll be in a position to change the outside world as well.
One of the interesting contradictions, at least in contemporary times, is that we have this warm and fuzzy feeling with respect to small business, but soon as business gets to a certain size, this negative narrative takes over.
Yeah, we've experienced that with Whole Foods, to be sure, and a great example in the media, that the historical media, was the It's a Wonderful Life movie with Jimmy Stewart,
mm-hmm.
the great Frank Capra movie, where Jimmy Stewart was the kind of reluctant small businessman at the building and loan, and the big business was represented by Mr. Potter, who was kind of the epitome of selfishness and greed. And while Jimmy Stewart played the character who really cared about other people, and I think that myth plays itself out. Corporations are sort of heartless, and they only care about money, and that's how they're seen by most people. Where at least with small business, you can have a relationship with someone, so they're not seen as so evil.
One of the things you talk about is going to the heart of what business is about and the kind of ethical foundation of capitalism itself. Talk a little about that, John.
The ethical foundation of business is that business is the greatest value creator in the world. Business has lifted humanity up in the last 200 years as free enterprise capitalism established itself during the Industrial Revolution. And most people are unaware, from a historical standpoint, exactly what business and capitalism have done, because they're just not well informed. And I will try to correct that partially here right now. Consider the fact that 200 years ago, which isn't that long, the 85% of the people alive on the planet Earth lived on less than $1 a day. 85%, that's in today's dollars. That figure's dropped to 16% today. If you look back, over 90% of the people alive 200 years ago were illiterate, and today that's down to 12%. The average lifespan 200 years ago was under 30, and today it's 68 across the world. It's 78 in the United States. It's about 80 in Japan. We've seen... 100 years ago, only 9% of the American adult population had the had high school diplomas, now 85%, 40% have college degrees versus 3% 100 years ago. We have made amazing progress, and it's been business. It's been the innovations and creativity of countless entrepreneurs who have helped humanity to progress. I mean, even in the last 20 years or so, I mean, we've seen the Internet, the World Wide Web created. We've seen smartphones like the iPhone. We've seen Google, which didn't exist 14 years ago. Facebook didn't exist 10 years ago. We've seen amazing transformations, and that has been due to business, in many cases big business, but it just doesn't get the credit for it. And so I think business has to ground its ethical foundation on value creation. Business creates value not for a few people, but for everybody who trades with it, and everybody trades with it on a voluntary basis. No one's coerced to trade. So it creates value for customers. It creates value for its employees. It creates value for the suppliers that trade with it. It creates value for the investors who risk their capital. And it creates value for the larger society. It provides philanthropic donations. It provides tax dollars. Business is the bedrock that is the foundation of our prosperity in our society. And it's the good guys. Business people are the heroes, are not the villains. And this is the tale that needs to be told. Because a 19% approval rating for business and 81% don't like it is not a good sign for where our civilization might be headed.
Is it your sense that we are beginning to see a generational shift here as we look at companies like Google, Starbucks, your company, Whole Foods, where there is greater acceptance among young people? Are we beginning to see a sea change in generational attitude towards business?
Possibly. It's a little early to tell how the millennial generation is going to come out on the issues. I'd have to say that the millennial entrepreneurs are definitely, if the conscious capitalism message is going to spread, it'll be these young millennial entrepreneurs who build a more conscious society. On the other hand, you've got a lot of millennials who mistrust business, who bought the line that it's greedy and selfish and evil. I mean, business is judged by its worst practitioners, and they're the ones that get the headlines. You've got whether it be Enron or Bernie Madoff or some type of corruption or bribery charge, that's what makes the headlines. And so business is seen as fundamentally tainted. And we don't tend to judge the other areas in our society by its worst practitioners. We don't judge our doctors by their worst practitioners, or our journalists, or our politicians, or our engineers or architects or scientists or teachers or any of the other areas. But business is held up to the standard where the worst examples are thought to be what business is all about. And yet business consists of literally millions of people and hundreds of thousands of organizations that every day go out there and create value for its customers, provide jobs for its employees and wages and benefits and helps their suppliers to flourish, creates prosperity for our society, and they just don't get the credit for it. So we've got to change that narrative. We've got to get business to think about a different way of expressing themselves. And the way we describe that in the book is it's important that business begin to articulate its higher purpose, why it exists besides just making money. Because business has higher purposes besides just making money. If you think about it, every other professions, doctors have to make money, and they're very well compensated. And yet their purpose isn't to make money. Doctors heal people, and teachers educate. And journalists, hopefully, like yourself, are helping to reveal the truth and uncover it. And we have architects design buildings and engineers construct things. Only business is seen in this narrow, selfish way of only being about money. And yet business people are the value creators. They're not just about money. So they have to begin to articulate why they exist and the good that they're doing in the world through the value creation that they produce.
Is part of the problem that there have not been sufficient metrics by which to tell that story, the value creation story?
That's an interesting question. I think possibly you're partly right. We need to develop more sophisticated, more articulate measures of the value creation business does besides just GDP. or just the employment rate and things like that.
I mean, for example, we can look at these lists that come out periodically of the best companies to work for, and if you look at the performance of those companies, we see that generally they outperform the S&P.
It's true. This is something we call attention to in the book, of how these more conscious companies truly do outperform, not by a little bit, but by a lot. It's actually a great investment strategy is to invest in the conscious companies because it's so outperform the S&P 500 and other indices. But I just think mostly it's that business doesn't do a good job defending itself, and the narrative has been hijacked by the critics and the intellectuals who never really liked business, and the whole making money is sort of disdainful to them. In Rome, for example, you couldn't even be elected. In ancient Rome, you couldn't even be elected to the Senate if you had anything to do with business. If you were you would just be disqualified because you would be seen as somehow or other tainted. And so business has got to articulate a higher purpose. It has to talk about the value creation it does, not just for a few people, because the narrative is that, well, that some people are getting rich and it's causing inequality and their wealth is coming at the expense of other people. It's like there's a big pie and the rich people are greedy because they're taking too big a slice of what's a pie that should be distributed equally. That ignores the fact that in business it's not a zero-sum game. It creates value and it lifts up. It makes the pie bigger. And business has done a very poor job of explaining that. And I think one thing business can do is it can talk about all the great value it's creating and to make the world a better place, and not just for a few people, but for everybody that trades with it. Everybody that trades with business does so voluntarily for their own mutual gain. And so business is helps everybody that trades with it is better off, or they wouldn't be trading with it. So customers are better, employees are better, suppliers are better, investors are better, and the community is better. That's the story we need to tell, and we need to do it in such a way that business people will first understand it, and then it'll spread throughout the rest of society.
In many ways, it has been a detriment, a contemporary detriment to business, that it has gotten caught up in the partisanship and politics of our time, and that has fed into the negative narrative of late.
It's true.
I mean, you got caught up in it.
I don't want to be caught up in it. I'm working hard because conscious capitalism is definitely not about politics. But unfortunately, in a lot of ways, whenever I talk on television or radio, people want to talk about politics, and I'm really working hard to try not to be doing that any longer. I really want to talk about the main message about conscious capitalism. It's not a political message.
It's a message also about corporate citizenship and how we define, though, and how we look at corporations as citizens of a larger society.
Absolutely. I think one of the things that business and thinking about itself, I think the citizenship metaphor is a good one, that we are members of communities, and insofar as we're members of communities, we have responsibilities to those communities. I mean, not only just paying taxes, but I think business should and does largely support the not-for-profit sector, the parts of our society that are also voluntary in the sense that nobody's forced to do business or trade with a nonprofit, but who doesn't have a way that tries to take on social problems that can't be made profitable. Many things business can help, but business can only do it if it's in an area they can make money. If it can't make money, then it's not really the right place for business to be. That falls into this the civil society where the nonprofit sector is. And I think business has a lot to offer the nonprofit sector. Not only does it have some donations and funding to offer, but it has the nonprofit sector is oftentimes not that efficient. Businesses is learn the skills of the intellectual skills of how to be effective and get things done. They can actually help the nonprofit sector in that regard. So I really believe in the partnerships between the for-profit and the nonprofit sectors. I think they have a lot to teach each other.
One of the complex issues for business, especially large business and even more so for public companies, is this notion you talk about of stakeholder integration, because we've come to look at those public companies as really only serving the stakeholders being the investors and not the larger framework that you talk about in conscious capitalism.
It's essential. As long as business will articulate that their only fiduciary responsibility is to create value for their investors and their only social responsibility is to maximize profits, they've already lost the argument. They will not be embraced by a larger society. They will be pigeonholed as selfish and greedy, when in fact business does create value for all these stakeholders. And arguably, even if your goal is simply to make money, the best strategy to fulfill that goal is to recognize that you have stakeholders and that those stakeholders are interdependent with each other, and so you should consciously create value for the other stakeholders, and that will result in making more money for your investors. Let me give you an example of that. You take a retail business like Whole Foods Market, and what we found is that we need to hire the very best people we can find to work for us, make sure they're well-trained, and then help them to be happy in the workplace, to help them enjoy their jobs, to be fulfilled, because when they're happy, then they're going to provide better service and better help to our customers, which will result in the customers being more satisfied with the business and also happier. And if they're happy, they're going to spread the word, they're going to tell their friends about the business, and they're going to be more loyal, they're going to do more shopping with us, and the business will, as a result, flourish. And as the business flourishes, that's good for the investors. So as I like to say, happy team members results in happy customers, which results in happy investors. So it is creating more shareholder value, but it's also creating more value for customers and more value for the employees as well. So they're all winning. Nobody's losing. It's not a big trade-off game. They're all flourishing. The business is flourishing. The customers are flourishing. The team members are flourishing. And the investors are flourishing. And then when you realize when you're a retail company like Whole Foods and you have suppliers, it's essential that the suppliers also flourish. And so everybody's winning. Everybody's flourishing. That's the beauty. That's the picture of conscious capitalism. And that's a story that we've got to tell a skeptical and cynical world.
Of course, integrated into all of that has to be the larger role of the company. And oftentimes today, there is always a public policy component of how companies operate and how they need to operate, which leads us to money and politics and lobbying, which adds to the problem.
Yeah, it really does. We talk about it in the book, and we describe it as crony capitalism, where when you have powerful government regulators and you have such a powerful government sector, that it creates perverse incentives for what you could call regulatory capture, where businesses are incented to make sure those regulators are not harming their business but helping their business. And one way they help their business is they can limit competition, they can set barriers to entry, they can set, for example, let's take the pharmaceutical industry. I mean, it takes about $1 billion now to bring a new drug to market. By the time you get it through the regulatory hurdles, it can take years and years and years working with the FDA. Almost all the regulators at the FDA have come out of the pharmaceutical industry, and when they leave the FDA, they'll go back into the pharmaceutical industry. So you've got a situation where, in a sense, you can't do a startup business that makes drugs because you can't afford the $1 billion to bring that drug to market. Only giant corporations can afford that, and so you have this sort of unholy alliance between the regulators and the very companies are supposed to regulate. And that similar thing plays itself out in a number of industries where you have strong regulations. And we end up with no longer a free enterprise capitalism, but very much a crony capitalistic society that contributes to the bad reputation of business as basically being sort of corrupt.
At the end of the day, does it come back to corporate leaders and the culture that they impart within their company, but more importantly, the way they present that culture to the world and how effective they are in doing that as individuals?
I definitely think that's a big factor, and that's what we're trying to address in our book, is the way business people and leaders think about business, the way they think about their companies, the way their cultures are created, the way they lead, the values that they champion. Business people need to think differently about their own business and business in general. They need to communicate it in a different way. We need to reconceptualize why business exists and how it's justified in the world and how it explains itself. And these are all things we talk about in the book.
As more and more women take the lead in big businesses, is that making a difference in the narrative?
It is beginning to make a difference, and it's going to make a huge difference over time. In doing the research of the book, we found some fascinating statistics out which I'll share with some of your listeners. Number one, 60% of all college graduates now coming through our colleges are women. 70% of graduate students are women. Almost all the professions, such as medicine, law, education, these are all going to be professions that women will dominate in the 21st century as we go further along in it. 40% of privately owned businesses are now owned by women, and 70% of startups are now by women, small business startups. So women are coming into the business sector, and they're coming in generally, oftentimes, with higher degree of emotional intelligence, strong communication skills, very relationship-oriented, and they haven't taken over, you might say, the larger corporations yet, but I believe that will be that'll be something we'll see happen largely in the next 15 to 20 to 25 years. And I think it's a good thing. I'm looking forward to it because I think women, at least at Whole Foods, they are amazing in terms of their, I mean, our company is very women-driven in many ways, and we've been beneficiaries as a result of this. So I think women, for one thing, are much more comfortable with love. Love needs to come out of the closet in our corporations where it's largely been hidden away. We need to move away from the locker room macho war talk of crushing this and rolling over that and dominating this and survival of the fittest and only the paranoid survive and a lot of kind of locker room macho talk that are the metaphors that corporations have largely run on. I look for those metaphors to change as women ascend to a greater leadership role. I'm looking forward to it.
John Mackey, CEO of Whole Foods. He's the author of Conscious Capitalism, Liberating the Heroic Spirit of Business. John, I thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thanks for having me on, Jeff. Have a great day.
Appreciate it.